This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. When Katie Savage was 14 years old, surgeons operated on her heart. She knew going in the procedure was serious, but she was not ready for what happened next. She woke up and realized that one of her legs was missing. It was amputated due to complications from the surgery. Going back to school wasn't easy. She was teased by other students, and it got so bad she left and finished high school from home. Now she's a junior at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, but she still sometimes feels out of place. She decided to band together with some other students who have disabilities, and together they formed a student group called Advocates for Carolina. And they've created an exhibition called This Able Life. It's up in the Union Gallery on the campus, and there's a reception tonight from 6 to 8. Joining us now to talk about it are Katie Savage, Joey Bozick, and Megan Gress. And they are all students at Carolina and founders of Advocates for Carolina. Welcome to all of you. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
So, Katie, why did you create this group? Tell us about it.
Well, I created this group to, first be a support for students who have disabilities and who are impacted by disability, but then also to create disability awareness on campus.
Well, tell us a little bit about more about your story.
Well, when I was 14 years old, I had heart surgery, and due to a blood clot, which got infected, I got gangrene. And from what I was told from my mom, they could save the right leg, but they couldn't save the left. And so my left leg was removed. And so
that you were not at all prepared for. So that is part of the trauma now. And you're in high school and you have to go back to school. Well, what was it like for you when you went back?
That was probably one of the most difficult times of my life. I remember my scar, the wound I had from when the incision wasn't even fully healed yet when I had gone back. But my mom said that the doctors felt it was important for me to go ahead and get back into school as soon as possible. And I was on crutches, and it was a very difficult transition for me, Frank.
Were students, I guess I was surprised, and maybe I shouldn't have been, that students were cruel to you. Did you feel that, or that it was, or simply that they didn't, that they wanted to stay away from you? What was the feeling? What happened?
There were some students who picked on me, but then also it was just realizing just how differently I was treated as an individual with a disability all of a sudden. I mean, to have 14 years of not knowing, having a life, you know, with my leg gone,
right,
you know,
right.
And then all of a sudden realizing, okay, I'm different. I'm different, and people see me as different.
Right.
There was a lot I was coming to terms with, right, you know, and grieving too. And so it was a mixture of things.
Well, I want to get to the other folks who are with you and your co-founders. Joey, you're an Iraq War vet, a triple amputee. He lost two legs and an arm. Can you tell us how it happened?
Sure. Yeah. So it's October of 2004. My unit was out on patrol. We were going up and down the main supply route where the vehicles that carried the supplies back and forth, because they shipped things over into Kuwait on boats. It was cheaper that way. And then they would ship the supplies up through Kuwait into Iraq, at least a lot of the major supplies. And so we would provide security for them, and we'd also patrol the area to make sure there was no insurgents or ambushes set up. And just one day someone had planted an IED underneath the ground, and my vehicle drove over top of it. And I was in the passenger front seat. I was a team leader at the time, and it exploded. And there was two other guys in the vehicle with me. They both got ejected from the vehicle, and I got trapped inside with the explosion. I was medevaced right away to the hospital, and the injuries were severe enough where they had to amputate there pretty much right away in order to get me stable. And they brought me over to back to the United States after about 2 weeks, and did my rehab at Walter Reed Army Medical Center for about a year and a half. And then after there, you know, life.
So again, up until then, you were able-bodied, and now you suddenly find yourself in this condition. You're a little older at the time this happens, you know, than Katie was. What was your adjustment like once you got out of that hospital?
To be honest with you, I joined the military at 22 years of age. I had been to college for a couple of years. I had worked, you know, in the restaurant business before that, joined a fraternity. I had gotten a lot of my later teenage years out of the way, and joining the military was one step to a final step of finding a career for myself. So by the time I got injured at 26 years old, I was able to come to terms with it pretty quickly. You know, the military is still volunteer-based this day, and for me, I was able to accept what had happened to me, and I figured that that was the quickest way for me to get on the road to recovery. But as far as being out, and that was a different story, because when you're first injured and you're in the hospital, you don't realize automatic doors or zero thresholds or ramps everywhere. But once you get out in the world and you have to go into a gas station or you have to get out and pump your gas, you really learn a lot about how unfortunate it is out there that things aren't completely accessible.
Not everything is accessible, even with the Americans for Disabilities Act. Well, Megan, please tell us your story.
I have a rare congenital defect called tibial hamartia, and when I was born, I didn't have a tibia in my right leg, and my fibula was enlarged. And so when I was 16 months old, my leg was amputated, and I got my first prosthesis when I was 2, and I've been wearing one ever since.
So you've had a whole a life right. of this experience, and for you, when you went to school, for instance, I mean, you heard Katie say she suddenly felt out of place, and you can imagine suddenly being in high school, leaving one day and coming back a few weeks later. How about you? Can you what sense of sort of where you fit?
The feeling out of place was more of growing into it for me. When I first went to school, you know, I was 5 as well as everybody else, and they thought it was cool, and you know, I could turn my leg upside down, and they thought that was really cool. And but once I got into about 8th grade, 9th grade, I noticed the little kids were, you know, asking their parents, you know, what happened to her? And parents were extremely uncomfortable with the fact that I could hear it, and that made everything a lot worse. And so I got more nervous about being out in public in shorts and having kids ask questions. And once I learned to deal with that and just smile at the kids and tell their parents, you know, it's okay, they can come ask me a question, it became a lot easier for me to accept that part of life.
So, Katie, what's the thrust of your exhibit? Maybe you can describe it for us. Tell us what we'll see and a little bit of the rationale behind it.
Absolutely. Well, the exhibit that we completed was it's featuring stories and of students who have disabilities, and it's amazing. It's us telling what disability means to us, because I've learned through meeting other students that we all kind of look at it differently, and also we're trying to reduce like the negative stigma that's around it as well. And so
well, Joey, if there is a stigma, how is it expressed on campus? I'm guessing people aren't cruel, are they?
No, not so much. I think it's more of a just an unknowingness, an unwillingness to – they just kind of, oh, I don't want to talk to this person. Yeah. I don't want to ask them what happened. They don't want to offend, but at the same time, I also get a sense that it's more – you know, you're at a very particular age from 18 to 20, 23 years old. You're trying to figure out a lot about yourself, and I think that they are just more focused on what they have going on, and then they see someone that looks different or acts different or may speak differently, and some disabilities aren't even noticeable. I mean, you happen to have 3 people with physical disabilities in here today, but there are people with mental disabilities and or, you know, loss of sight, things that wouldn't be noticeable. And I think in general from the staff and the people that are at Carolina, they want to do whatever they can to make sure that we are comfortable and we receive the education that we are, you know, paying for. But I think from the student body, it's more of a sense of just not being unaware. And that's what I think the exhibit is one of the things we're trying to do with the exhibit also, like Katie said, is raise awareness, is come out here, talk to us, see our pictures, hear our stories, and ask us questions and learn a little bit more about your fellow students.
You know, Megan, it seems to me that there's a kind of an inherent conflict in our understanding of disabilities, in the sense that, you know, schools are now dedicated to mainstreaming. And the message that an able-bodied student might take away is, look, everybody's normal, everybody's just like me, so I'm just going to ignore it and pretend that it isn't anything else. I mean, that's the kind of message you might take away from what seems to be a well-meaning effort to bring everybody together. But I'm hearing that that's also a way of not engaging you fully. I mean, is that part of what you're experiencing?
I would think so. I'm teaching elementary school now, and part of what is my philosophy of teaching is anti-bias education and just focusing on the fact that, and it's not that everyone is normal and the same, but that everyone is different. And if we talk about the differences with everyone, we can talk about the differences in ourselves and understand that, you know, it's okay to be different no matter how you're different, because I think everyone wants to stand out in some way. And if you have something that's very clearly helping you stand out, you know, accepting that and everyone else accepting it as well helps you accept yourself at the same time.
Is that what you're feeling, Katie? Is it's what's unspoken on the campus that you're that troubles you?
Well, I wouldn't say that it troubles me. I guess, like, I feel like I want to bring just – I want for, you know, disability to be just more visible. I want to establish that presence more, you know. And I would say that that would be the case.
What would you like to come out of this, Joy? What would you like the message to be? And for students who go and visit this, what would you like them to take away?
I would like for them to be more aware of the community that they're in. I think sometimes we get surrounded and put blinders on, and we have our group of friends and we have our Facebook page and we have our things that are important to us. And when someone is laying on the side of the ground because they tripped on, you know, something that somebody left and they fell down, that they may need help, or that they might be 5 minutes late to class every single day, and don't think badly of that person because it takes them longer to get there from their car. And to just raise awareness and for people to understand and be better people for them. My kids are going to grow up not knowing any differently, and I think that that's a benefit to them.
Is there a way that you want to be treated or spoken to that would be different than what's now? Are you feeling this in that way, in the way that people respond to you and interact with you?
I don't think there's any animosity at all. I do believe that people just, like we were talking about earlier, they have a sense of they don't know about it, they didn't grow up with it, and so therefore it's better if I just ignore it. And at the same time, I don't want every single person that I walk past to come up to me and say, hey, what happened to you? Tell me your story. So there is definitely striking a balance in life, and it's difficult for everyone. But the people who are truly interested and want to know and want to help are the ones that we're trying to reach.
We haven't really talked about the sort of the core tactical accessibility questions. Is Carolina generally accessible? Are there problems with accessibility on the campus, Megan?
It is generally accessible. There are problems with things, you know, the bricks get very slippery when it rains, and so people who might have balance issues will have trouble with that. there are some elevators that don't always work and some accessible doors that aren't always functional. In general, campus is accessible. It can become more difficult. You know, some classes aren't accessible. Some buildings, you know, you can't get to the second floor if you're in a wheelchair. It would be helpful for there just to be more knowledge around campus of what buildings are and aren't accessible, which directions you should take.
You know, it'd be interesting to know, Katie, when you pulled this group together, how you organized and what was the initial response when you put out the call and how you did that.
It's been... the response has been fantastic. I mean, I didn't know that it would grow to be so big and have such a positive impact, and that, I mean, our community would be so responsive. And the students, though, who this organization has brought together, I mean, for me at least, it's been just incredible. I mean, I've met some amazing students. It's been amazing. Frank.
Well, let me ask you, Joey, when you first heard the idea, what was your first thought about this, putting together an exhibit and kind of raising awareness?
I thought it was a fantastic idea. Everyone, the key thing with disabilities is that I think we have a tendency to be grouped together. Everyone in a wheelchair is the same. Everyone with a prosthetic leg is the same. And as you've heard from our three very different stories, we all come about it at different times, different ages, and go through different stages of recovery. So I think that being able to look at this exhibit and see the individuals and see and to learn about their disabilities or their abilities, I mean, just it even amazes me to sit and talk and listen to stories from some of the people that are within the group. And I think it's a great opportunity for staff, for administration, for other students to come and say, well, you know what? I thought everyone in the wheelchair was the same because I didn't know. And now I can see different obstacles that they've had to overcome and how they've lived their life. And it may hopefully will raise respect and diversity.
And Megan, are there able-bodied members of this group as well?
There are. Yeah, absolutely. People come in who just have friends or siblings who might have some sort of disability. People who are just interested in helping out. People who... with dyslexia or auditory processing disorders, things like that. So there, it's a huge variety of
people. And, of course, we're talking about physical disabilities, and you've mentioned mental disabilities as well. But I think the thing that the conversation helps us understand is that we all have enormous strengths and gifts, and then we all have disabilities and weaknesses that are holding us back, whether they're visible, whether they're physical or mental or emotional. One way or another, we're good at some stuff and not good at others. And this conversation, I think, shines a light on that too, our own disability. So I thank you for putting the exhibit together and talking with us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Katie Savage, Joey Bozick, and Megan Gress, all students at Carolina, founders of the group Advocates for Carolina for students with disabilities at UNC Chapel Hill. Members of that group have created an exhibition called This Able Life. It is up at the Union Gallery on campus. There's a reception tonight from 6 until 8, and you can find out more about Advocates for Carolina at facebook.com/advocatesforcarolina. You know where to find us. We're at stateofthings.org, and I want to thank you for listening to the program, one that is directed by Alex Granados and produced by Isaac Davey Aronson, Sean Wen, and Nicole Campbell. Christina Blyde is our intern. Robin Copley, the technical director. Brent Wolf is our news director, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.